I like it when we stand up before I start. It kind of gets everybody going a little. That used to be the tradition in the church. That song before the lesson, everybody always stood up. Typically, it was kind of something that gets a little energy going and kind of lift things just a bit. But I appreciate your willingness to do that. You may remember an old game. It was a game that I played a lot in my younger years, and we called it telephone. And I probably got any number of different names, but the basic premise of the game was a person on one end would say something. Sometimes it was actually written down, and then they would whisper it to the next person and the next person and the next person all the way around, and then the person at the end would say the message that was whispered. And, of course, it had no semblance of connection to what was originally stated. It would just sometimes be mind-boggling how different it had become, and going through 8 or 10 or 12 people. And it really kind of taught you a lesson about how quickly and how easily things could change from person to person. The other night at Whataburger, Kip and Cosey and Johnny and Terry were playing, just sitting around the table. The kids were having a great time with it. But it just brings us back to the idea that communication is so critical when it's handled right, because there's so many places where it can slide away and it can cause a lot of difficulty. A few weeks ago, we talked about James chapter 3. James addresses this large section to the tongue. And then today in chapter 4, he's going to come back again and re-emphasize one particular element of this communication process. We're going to start in James chapter 4, verses 11 and 12 this morning. Brothers and sisters, do not slander one another. Anyone who speaks against a brother or sister judges them, speaks against the law, and judges it. When you judge the law, you're not keeping it, but sitting in judgment on it. There's only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and destroy. But you, who are you to judge your neighbor? Do not slander one another. Now, why in the world would James need to say that? Well, unfortunately, because it happens. I won't ask you to hold up your hand, but my guess is that when I ask this, there'd be maybe a complete number of hands. How many people here today have been wounded by slander? How many people here today have been wounded by the slander of your brothers and sisters in Christ? How many people aren't here today because they were wounded by slander? And then probably the much more painful question is, when have I engaged in what really would be considered and called slander? James talks about it because it's real. It happens in our world. It happens in our fellowship. And it's painful and destructive. And he's saying very straightforwardly, don't do it. Slander is a serious sin. Slander is incredibly destructive. It, quote, lies in wait, according to Proverbs 12:6, destroys neighbors, according to Proverbs 11:9, and separates close friends, Proverbs 16:28. But while both gossip and slander involve destructive speech, slander adds the additional element of dishonesty. And one of the issues in talking about slander, it occurs a number of times in the Bible, a number of times in the New Testament, is this: what is slander? What is it? We live in a world where slander and libel are two concepts that we hear about a great deal. Typically, somebody famous or some news agency will say something or do something something that's considered slanderous, and somebody else will bring a lawsuit perhaps or call them out on this particular thing. And if you've looked at that or thought about that very much at all, you know that proving slander is almost impossible to do. Now, every now and then, someone is successful in that effort. Proving libel is a very difficult thing to do. And so when we hear the word slander, We think only of the most extreme kind of things that are so obviously untrue that it can be proven. And yet, Scripture is not using slander in those particular terms. It's a totally different kind of aspect for us. What is it? Some people would say it's malicious lying. But if you look at a number of versions, you'll find over and over again the translation for this particular section, do not speak evil against. Slander is saying evil things that are false and generally attacking character. We say things about people that we know aren't true. And we also know that if we can undermine their character, if we can undermine their influence, then we're able to get our point or win the day much more easily. And so we fall into that habit. We do that kind of simply. We're not supposed to be criticizing. We're not supposed to be judging. We're not supposed to be saying evil things, especially things we know that are false, against the people that are a part of God's family. Now, a lot of times when you start to evaluate yourself or assess yourself, the reality is sin came into this a long time before slander. There were things that you were already doing, already saying, already thinking that had brought you into a place where you reached a sinful situation before you ever got to a slanderous state. And the reminder is about how damaging this can be. And we think back to ourselves and say, why would I do that? You know, I'm an intelligent person. I'm a self-controlled person. Why would I say slanderous things about other people? Well, let's look at some passages real quickly because I think it gives us a little bit of understanding. Two from Paul. First is Ephesians chapter 4, verse 31. Get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling, and slander, along with every form of malice. And then a similar passage that he uses in Colossians, this time from Colossians 3, verses 7 and 8. You used to walk in these ways in the life you once lived, but now you must also rid yourselves of all things such as these: anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language coming from your lips. Notice it's kind of a circle here. There are some associated behaviors. You're angry. Your anger goes to the level of reaching rage. Maybe you're saying things that are inappropriate in terms of being described here as being filthy. There's malice in your mind and malice in your conversation. And you find yourself in this cycle, and before you know it, you're involved in slander. Not so much that you say, well, I'm going to slander somebody, but we get caught up in that kind of behavior. And then when we wake up, it's like, oh, did I say that? I didn't realize, I didn't intend to go that far. 1 Peter 2:1. Therefore, rid yourselves of all malice and all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and slander of every kind. Again, a context of behaviors. And then Jesus himself would say in Matthew chapter 15, verses 19 and 20, for out of the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false testimony, slander. He goes on to say these are the things that defile a person. We can get caught up in a cycle. And we can be conscious, if we will, of the fact that, okay, I'm moving in a direction. I feel this happening. It's time for me to pull back. It's time for me to disconnect emotionally from where I know this can go. And it takes a great deal of discipline to do that. There's a real emphasis on false. You know, saying evil things that aren't true. So if they're true, that's okay. Years ago, when I was in youth ministry, we had two boys who wanted to go to a summer camp. They had been there as counselors, as campers, and they wanted to work as junior counselors. And so I had made the arrangements for them to do that. And on the Sunday before, we had taken a bunch of kids up there. And these two guys, Michael and Ron, were going to be junior counselors that week. So we went back on Thursday night for a big presentation and got there on Thursday afternoon. And turned out, instead of putting Michael and Ron with a senior counselor, they just put them together and gave them their own cabin, about eight boys in there. So I couldn't find Michael and Ron. I went down to the cabin, and what I heard was just incredible. The boys were calling each other terrible names.
Hey, Fatso, sit down. Yeah, hey, stupid. Four Eyes,
you know, just on and on. I said, guys, what are you doing? And they said, it's okay. Michael and Ron told us it was all right. Why is it all right? Well, they said that we could say anything that was true, and we couldn't say anything that was false. And the big heavyset kid said, yeah, and I'm fat, so that's why they call me Fatso. And they went around the room, and they kind of fessed up to the different things that were a part of their lives. Well, I went to find the two boys, and I said, guys, what happened? And they said,
we messed up.
We just knew that the standard was truth. And if everything they said was true, then it would be all right. They'd get along great. I said, well, how are they getting along? Well, they hate each other. It's been a miserable week. We were looking forward to those kind of wonderful experiences that you have when you go to camp, but we missed the boat totally and completely. And the reason is Satan crawled right in that loophole and said, oh, it may be true, but I can manipulate this. It's more than just truth involved. Number one, if we have to speak something painful, if we have to speak something that is difficult to hear, Scripture tells us that we do that in love. We do that with as much of a proper motivation as we possibly can. The society would look at us and say, you know, you might want to think of, is it necessary to say it? Is it beneficial? What's going to come out of it if you do that? And so even though everything false are things we stay away from, even some things that are true are not beneficial. The last thing, or the next thing that is in that passage, sometimes we have our explanations for why we say certain things, and I've heard all of these. If you had heard what they said about me, they had to be stopped. Well, I just tell it like it is. And the way they behave, they aren't really Christians, so I don't have to even consider them my brother or my sister. Those are rationalizations that we come up with. And those things free us from having to live within the restraints of guarding our communication. And James knew that people were going to offer those explanations. So what does he say about that? The middle part of these verses gets lost. The end of verse 12 and then down into the middle part of verse 11 and then back into verse 12. Anyone who speaks against a brother or sister judges them, speaks against the law, and judges it. How are you judging the law? Well, it's pretty simple. If God says not to do it and you do it anyway, you're saying, I'm smarter than God. I know better than God knows. Because they're really giving me a hard time. They're really making life difficult for me. They're really being unchristian. They're behaving in terrible ways. And so I'm going to respond to that. Somebody's got to hush them up. Somebody's got to draw the line. Somebody's got to do this or that or whatever. And God says, wait a second. I told you not to slander. And when we say, well, this is a special situation, what we're doing is judging God's law. We're judging the boundaries and the parameters that he's put on us, and we've said, that doesn't apply to me. That doesn't apply to me. I'm going to do something else. The last thing that comes out in this passage is that very end, when James asks rather pointedly, but you, who are you to judge your neighbor? You know, sometimes a parent in siblings will say, well, you're not supposed to do that. And the sibling will say, but he or she did. And the parent says, I'm not talking about them, I'm talking about you. And that's a good thing to remember. When God says for us not to do it, and we say, well, everybody else is doing it, you can almost hear in your ear him saying, oh, I'm talking to you. This is about you and your behavior. That person belongs to me. And as the Father, it's up to me to deal with that. Paul says a similar kind of thing. In Romans chapter 4, verse 4, who are you to judge someone else's servant? To their own master, servants stand or fall, and they will stand. For the Lord is able to make them stand. It's not up to you to judge somebody else's servant. You can see that in a secular situation. If somebody else has an employee, it's not your responsibility to evaluate that employee. It's the responsibility of the person or the company that for whom they work. Don't judge somebody or someone just because they sin differently than you. It's a real easy trap to fall into. That's not a problem for me, but it is for this other person. And James is reminding us that we don't need to be worried about somebody else's. We need to be removing the plank from our own eye. So how do we deal with this? How do we keep from slandering others? Let me share with you three quick things, three passages, and then the lesson will be yours. The first is from Romans chapter 13, verse 11. Love does no harm to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. I'm trying to love. I'm trying to love as fully and completely as possible. Because I'm a human being, that gets complicated. And because the other person is a human being, that gets complicated. But I have choices about whether I'm going to love or whether I'm going to respond in anger and rage and malice and wind up with slander. The second passage is from 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verses 10 and 11. Anyone you forgive, I also forgive. Now this is Paul talking, this is not Jesus talking. And what I have forgiven, if there was anything to forgive, I have forgiven in the sight of Christ for your sake. Why, Paul? In order that Satan might not outwit us, for we are not unaware of his schemes. Anytime there's this chaos of anger and malice and rage and slander, we know who's working there in the middle of it. Satan is getting his way. Satan is able to work his will. Satan is able to create his damage. Satan is able to bring destruction. And so Paul says, you know, the better thing to do is just forgive it and not get caught up. That whole vicious cycle. And then the last one is Hebrews chapter 12, verse 15. See to it that no one falls short of the grace of God, and that no bitter root grows up to cause trouble and defile many. Can't tell you how many times I've seen that bitter root. That root that grows. That root that gets stronger and stronger. That root that takes up more and more space. And people have nursed that root and they've allowed it to grow. They've watered it. They've moved all the weeds. And it's become so taken over in their life. It's taken over their life so much that that's really all that life is about. And other people get blamed for that root being in their life. And anytime they have an opportunity to fire back or respond back or damage the person or the people that they think may be involved with it, then they take every opportunity. And that root just continues to grow. We can find that root and we can damage it. We can take it out. God's help. We can triumph over it. Please don't hurt your brethren. Sure, there are a lot of touchy folks out there, but there are also a lot of wounded people. And we know that because we've been wounded ourselves. It can happen simply. It can happen without a thought. It can happen in moments where we really wish we had that moment to live again. There's one last slide I'd like to show you. What you say about others says more about you than it does about them. And that really is one of the strong things that comes through this particular verse. This morning we offer an invitation. It's the invitation of our eternal Father. If you need to respond to that in any way, if we can help you in any way, we'd invite you to make that known while we sing this song of encouragement.